Okay, so we are now live and obviously allowing our attendees to come into this session. I'll just give you guys a few minutes just to jump in. Fantastic, lots of people coming in. So just giving it a moment to let everybody get into the webinar, and then we'll do a few introductions. So today we're joined by Simon Chaplin. I'm James Byrne. I head up Accountancy Manager, and we're going to hand over to Simon shortly to get his take on and his experience on how he runs an accountancy practice. He runs his firm in quite a unique way. He lets his team pick when and where they want to work and hasn't touched a timesheet in years. So we're gonna use the Q&A box if you guys have got questions along the way. If you guys just wanna test out the Q&A box for me now, just to make sure that A, everybody can hear me, and B, just to make sure that people are aware of where it is. Better to use the Q&A box than the chat box. That's great. Great stuff. Okay, that's enough. Thank you for that. Perfect. Hello, everybody. Hi, James. James Twigger. Nice to see you in here. Haven't spoken to you for a little while. Good to see you. That's great. Okay, I'll just clear those off so that we've got it nice and clear. Okay, that's great stuff. Okay, so welcome to everybody. As I say, I'm James Byrne, Head of Accountancy Manager. You know, I'm sure all of you are aware of what we do. You know, we're an onboarding practice management tool. But today, it's not about us, this is about Simon, and we're going to hear from Simon his experiences of running a firm. So over to you, Simon, to introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, James, for letting me join your community at Wednesday lunchtime when the sun is shining and you have every excuse, although I'm not quite sure officially yet we're allowed to go and sit in the park with lots of people, but you would, of course, have every excuse to go out and sit in the park and enjoy the sunshine. So it's an honor to have you along with me. As James shared, these sessions, I love these sessions to be completely interactive. So as I talk and share ideas and concepts, I hope that you find them inspiring. Some of them you might find challenging, but whatever you do with them, then I would like to support you through the process of learning and developing your practice. So if you have any questions whatsoever, pop them in the Q&A box or pop them in the chat box and I will answer them as I go along. And as we always say within the accountancy practice, and the same applies within the Accountants Mastermind, I like stupid questions. Stupid questions are easy to answer. It's the difficult ones that I don't like. So if you feel you have a stupid question, then just pop them in the box and I will fire them away. So how did I end up in this position? Well, I have an accountancy practice in Peterborough called Greenstones. I acquired that practice from a Mr. Stone many moons ago, back in 2002. And at that point, I looked at the practice and said, is it going to look like this when I am finished? And ultimately, the answer to that was no. So I started on a journey and I went through various different things, different coaches, different networks, and I developed the practice. And over the first half a dozen years, we tripled turnover, quadrupled profit, increased the number of teams, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a bit of a success story. We won all sorts of different awards. Then we got through to about 2008. Oh, we dumped timesheets, by the way, in 2004. So we haven't had timesheets for the best part of 16 years now. It was at the same time when the money laundering regulations came in. And I am quite passionate about not keeping timesheets and not measuring inputs rather than measuring outputs, which I will share as we go through. On the basically on RO, which is results only work environment, which is the system that allows my team to work wherever they like, whenever they like. Somebody shared with me a book called Drive by Dan Pink, and that's potentially the first action point that you might take from this conversation today. I read the book called Drive by Dan Pink. Within that book, he then recommended another book called Why Work Sucks and What to Do About It, which I then read. And the philosophy of it resonated to me to a point where I wanted to give my team the freedom and ultimately treat them like grown-ups. So one of the points of the book were all these people that work for us, they at home, they have babies, they have houses, mortgages, pets, they have deaths within the family, they look after their parents, they do schooling for their children, do all these different things, and they can do that autonomously, and they don't die, they remember to eat and drink and all those sort of things. Whereas when they come to work, we treat them like children, and we dictate to them what they do and when they do it. And worse still, if we keep timesheets, we actually monitor and record whether they go to the toilet or not and how many cups of tea they have in a day. So we record it on timesheets in 6-minute segments, and we control them when outside of work they are, in effect, grown-up people. So I agreed with the philosophy, and that was how we started the journey to get to allow our team to work wherever they like, whenever they like.
Simon, can I jump in and ask a quick question myself? And then we've also got one from the audience. So one of the things I would ask is, if you don't have, and I appreciate that tracking time, you know, in terms of monitoring your team is one thing, but how about when it goes about tracking profitability in terms of the amount of time you're spending on your clients? How do you go about that and make sure that you're still generating a profit?
So with regards to specific profitability or profitability specific to a customer, it's very easy. I'll just ask the team. So if I go into the office tomorrow, not that we can go into the office at the moment, but if I sent an email out to the team at the moment and said, hello, can you tell us the least profitable customers within Greenstones? I will get back an email and there'll be half a dozen names, perhaps a dozen names of customers that are least profitable. And I'll challenge the people on the call today. I bet if I said to them, don't look at the timesheets, but tell me which of your customers are the least profitable, they will be able to name them. So there'll be low fees and lots of aggravation. Basically, you'll be ringing them up. They won't be returning your telephone calls. You'll be asking for information and they won't send it in. The records, the bank won't reconcile, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't need timesheets in order to establish whether a job is profitable or not. Your gut will tell you whether it is. Now, I can accept that some people get some comfort in keeping timesheets in order to establish whether the job is profitable or not. But very often those people will say, yeah, we keep timesheets, but we don't price by timesheets. And I'll say, okay, so what do you do with them then? And they'll say, well, we'll work out whether we're profitable or not. And then the question is, well, if you're not profitable on that job, then what do you do? And they'll say, we'll increase the prices. Okay, so you're actually using the timesheet to work out whether you're profitable or not and whether to increase the prices or not. So you are keeping timesheets to determine your prices rather than looking to the market and establishing your prices through value pricing and delivering a great service.
Okay, thanks for that, Simon. Yeah, and part of the reason for challenging it is because one of the things that we promote in Accountancy Manager is timesheets for profitability. So it's interesting to see two different takes on it. And obviously, there's the opportunity to have an overview of that if you want, but it depends on how you're going to utilize that data and if you're going to use it correctly. Because if you don't put the full effort into that kind of a thing, then it's going to make it very tricky to get an accurate result out of it. And obviously, you can rely on, you probably can, you know, if I think back to when I was working in a practice, I knew which clients were the ones I was having to constantly chase, the ones that always got their records to me last minute. Then, you know, would be the difficult ones when it came to getting their work done, you know, on the last day of the month. You do get a bit of an idea. So I guess, you know, there are a number of different ways to work it.
Yeah, so just finishing off on those timesheets, James, my biggest bugbear is I know, just the same as you do, when we was preparing accounts, when we was doing the donkey work, for want of a better phrase, we would lie on the timesheets. So I knew which were the good jobs and which were the bad jobs, and I would pinch time from that job, or if I had made a mistake or whatever and I needed to dump some time somewhere, I could manipulate the timesheet in order for me to hit budgets on various jobs. And I've never met an accountant yet that has said to me, Simon, no, categorically, I never did that. Every 6 minutes I wrote a unit down, or 15 minutes I wrote a unit down, and my timesheet was 100% accurate. Because it just, that person does not exist. If anybody's on the call and they think they did do that, then please feel free to share and we'll have a conversation afterwards. So firstly, the recording system is rubbish. Secondly, you then give it to somebody else in the office and they process it. And whilst they're processing it, they make mistakes, they code it to the wrong job, they code it to admin instead of the client, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I know if you use something like Accountancy Manager, a lot of that's been removed because it's logged in real time, but the individual can still, by mistake, allocate it to the wrong customer or whatever. And then finally, the timesheet or the billing lands on the partner's desk, and the partner goes, or the director goes, I can't bill all that. And they ignore it anyway and bill what they think they can get away with, or they bill last year plus a bit, or worse still, they bill what they billed last year because they didn't increase the prices at all. Mm-hmm. So the whole process is flawed all the way through. And I just, from an admin perspective, I just feel as though it's a waste of time when you can go to the team and say, who is it that's least profitable? Who is it that we need to be having a pricing conversation with? And then go and take that action proactively rather than surprise billing them off the back of a timesheet that says that we've taken too long to do the job.
I think one of the important things there is that if you are going to go down the route that we're talking about there, you've got to stick to your guns, haven't you? You can't say you're going to do it and then kind of get that information, gather that data, and then not stick with it. I'll just make sure for those of you that are accountancy manager users, just make you aware that obviously with logging time with accountancy manager, if you do click on say the time logging button, then that does automatically pull in the client's name and the task, so it avoids that manual entry and the risk of obviously errors. But yeah, two sides of the coin. They're quite interesting, obviously, to have a discussion around that. We've got a question from Vijay. Have you got manual book for accounting practice? Have you got a manual book for accounting practice?
So just to expand on that, Vijay, I don't believe so. Certainly not one that I can give away anyway. We use a thing called Suite Process, and Suite Process records all of our systems in order to make sure that the quality of information, the quality of the documentation that's going out to the customers is the same across the board. So one of the big things for customer service, one of the things that upsets customers is when they don't get something consistently. So it's the reason why franchises are as popular as what they are. So if you imagine you walk into a town square, you can see Pizza Express and you can see a local independent pizza place. You are more likely, because of the pressure of making a decision and the quantity of decisions that we have to make in a day, you are much more likely to go to Pizza Express to get the service because you know what they're going to give you, rather than take the risk of the TripAdvisor ratings being the Italian bloke's best mate or whoever it is that's upgraded. So I don't have anything that I can give you on that, but certainly within Greenstones, as much as you can be, because it's a never ending moving feast, VJ, but we definitely have a playbook or a set of systems that's recorded in Suite Process in order to make sure that the service is delivered consistently.
Thanks, Simon. And there was, Fiona just had come in a little while ago. You said you'd recommended two books. One was Drive by Dan Pink. What was the other one, please? Can you just remind
The second one was Why Work Sucks and What to Do About It. If you stick it in Amazon, it will come up towards the top. It's a white book with red writing on the top. It's Callie Reeler, and there's another lady as well whose name I can never remember. That book provokes you on why you need to have your team within the office within a set timescale. So it goes through and lists ways that you can measure the output of the team rather than the inputs in the timesheet. And I always start when I do these presentations live, I always start by saying, if you get to the end of this conversation and think, I do that or we do that because we've got flexi time, then you've missed the point. There is no time whatsoever involved in this process. So I set KPIs, I set key performance indicators, targets for the team, together with the team. They're not dictated to them, but we set targets. We set the output that I require or the practice requires in exchange for their salary. And then we pay them the money, I pay them the money, and they return the output. So that's basically what that book says. Now, there's a couple of examples that I always use, James, in this scenario. One is around Saturdays and Sundays. So when you're at home on a Saturday or a Sunday, do you have a lunch break? And the simple answer to that is no. For the majority of people, they don't stop work at 1 o'clock and start work at 2 o'clock on a Saturday or a Sunday. So you're cutting the lawn, washing the car, going to Tesco's and doing all these different things, but you don't stop at 1 o'clock and then start again at 2 o'clock. But there are still accountancy practices out there that will start work at 9 o'clock. They will stop for their lunch at 1 o'clock. They will start again at 2 o'clock and they will finish again at 5 o'clock or 5:30. Now, the only reason why we do that is because back in the industrial ages, the factory closed and everybody had to stop work because the production line wasn't going. So in reality, now we don't need to do that. We're just doing it because that's what existed or what has existed for the last 100 years. So you don't need to stop. The other one is around the working week. So most businesses and most accountancy practices, they set their key performance indicators Monday through Friday. So the worst thing to do is to turn up on a Monday morning when you're all a bit down because you've just lost the weekend or the weekend's just finished and set targets for the week. And then the last thing you want to do on a Friday afternoon, if you're allowed, obviously to go to the pub, the last thing you want to do on a Friday afternoon is to work to and complete your targets. You just want to go home. You want to go to the pub. You want to go home to your family or whatever it is. So why do we insist on doing KPIs to the working week? So at Greenstones, what we've done is change the working week from Wednesday to Tuesday. So the targets are set on a Wednesday and they're measured to 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. And again, productivity will go up because people are much more likely to stay behind on a Tuesday night to complete their targets. And they're in a much better mood when they're setting their expectations on a Wednesday morning with regards to what they're going to choose to do in that working week. So that book is full of ideas, challenges like that around why we choose to work in this stereotypical old-fashioned way where we turn up at 5 o'clock, turn up at 9 o'clock and go home at 5 o'clock.
That's interesting, Simon. And I suppose that book is not just directed at accountants, though, is it? It's directed at lots of different businesses. And I expect there's lots of people on here that might be thinking, well, what happens when it's the 30th of the month or 31st of the month and it's a Friday and the client again has maybe only just provided all the records to them, or it's the 31st of January, and it kind of, that can, you know, there are times I think in the accounting profession when we can't always kind of be as flexible as we might like to be, because sometimes we're having to be reactive rather than proactive. Would you agree?
I do, but again, I will challenge accountants on that. So there is another great book called The Road Less Stupid by a chap called Keith Cunningham. If you've not read that book, get it. It was my book of the year last year. In that book, Keith talks about you get what you tolerate. Okay, you get what you tolerate. So if you've got customers that are delivering records on the 30th of June or the 31st of January, that's because you are tolerating it. And it's very easy for us to sit there and go, it's their fault. They're not delivering the information. We're running around. Oh no, we've got a panic and we've got this to do and that to do and all the rest of it. But if you stopped tolerating it, if you respected yourself and asked the customer and told the customer what it is that you wanted and when you wanted it in a way that motivated them to deliver it, then you wouldn't have that anymore. And it's incredibly easy to make this excuse. I have this conversation all the time when we talk about social media. So accountants will sit there and go, I need a new website or I need a social media campaign or something like that. And it's like, so why are you doing that? Well, we need more leads. Okay, so have you maximized the return on your current client bank? So have you cross-selled as much as possible to your current client bank? Very often the answer to that is no. And then secondly, do you have referral systems in place in order to make sure that you're maximizing the number of referrals you get? And the answer to that is almost certainly no. And the reason why they go to social media and websites is because there's somebody else to blame. So I'm not getting leads because the website is rubbish, the social media person's rubbish, Twitter's rubbish, or whatever it is. Whereas if they look at internally and their referral systems, there's nobody else to blame but them. So there's a book, and I'll share the link if we get to the end, if anybody's interested. I've written a little leaflet about my 12 top tips to get more referrals. And I would put money on the fact that if any accountant on this call gets that, there will be at least one idea in there that, well, I know there is, because I know how many accountants there are in the country that have got a cardboard cutout that asks for referrals. And I would put money on them not being one of the people on this call. So there'll be at least one idea in there that you're not currently using that you could implement. So step one with that. Work out what it is that you've got in your current customer base. So they already trust you. They already like you. They're already using you. So what else might they buy from you? And then secondly, look at a referral system. So it's about taking responsibility, James, and ownership for the decisions that you make and the information and the things that you implement. Sorry, there's a bit of a rant there.
No, it's good. And I think one of the things you talked about there is motivating the clients. Well, in my practice, originally what we did is we charged, and it's certainly one way to motivate, is there would be a penalty, which is one way to go. It's kind of with the stick, you know, rather than the carrot. But it's if you don't get them on time, there'll be a percentage of your fee increase and there'll be a minimum fee of this. And that would obviously, you know, boost a lot of people to get them in. And if they didn't, and you did end up, say, working at 11 o'clock on a Friday night, you're being paid the right money to be putting that time in. And you talked a little bit about the book as well and about how you can work in a number of different ways. You know, one of the strategies that we implemented with the accountants in the practice was that they actually received a percentage of the overall fee. So it didn't matter to us when they worked. They could work whenever they wanted. They had they knew what their tasks were. They knew what their clients were. They had client portfolios. And it was almost set up in a franchise way. So they'd get, say, 45 to 55% of the overall fees and the rest would go into the practice. It's a bit trickier to deal with, say, admin staff in the practice, though, is it not, Simon? If you've got people in the admin team or you've got people that you need to have somebody ideally, because it's all well and good having flexi time. And I know that there's lots of practices that are introducing that kind of a strategy at the moment. You know, core hours, 10 till 3, but you can come in early or finish late, whatever works for you and your family. But when it comes to obviously having, we have an accountancy manager as well. So we have core hours, we have 10 till 3, but the sales team and the support team, they're needing to be in here from 9 till 5:30 so that everybody has got them on hand. So how, is there a way around that, you know, for you? Do you think there's a way around it for having people on the phones available to contact the business rather, and which obviously kind of goes against having the flexi time? What would you say?
You know, there's two things with that. The first one is definitely it's far easier to set targets, to set outputs for salespeople and production people. There's absolutely no two ways about that. So within Dan's book, Dan talks about everybody having at least three KPIs, and those KPIs need to be one that measures quantity, one that measures quality, and one that measures development. So we'll deal with development first. Every single person wants to be developing. They want to be learning. They want to be improving. So we need to measure and monitor that in order to be able to demonstrate to them that they are. And there's all sorts of different ways, training plans and whatnot, that you can set up in order to do that. That one's reasonably easy for admin, because admin should be developing, learning how to use Word quicker or whatever it is. The second two is a little bit more challenging, quantity and quality. If you don't have a quantity and a quality measure, you get lots of rubbish or very little perfect stuff. So that's where the yin and the yang and the balance works through. So every team member, when you set up the KPIs, need to have those numbers. Now, once you think about it in that perspective, you can then develop KPIs for your admin team. So depending on what your admin team do, say, for example, we have a practice manager and one of her roles is to get clients' records in, then she can be targeted on the number of days it takes her to get the records in, for example. If she's got a target for returning client records, then it's how many client records she returns. If it's the time it takes for a customer to sign off tax returns, then we can measure how long it takes her to sign off tax returns. So you look at, you analyze what their role and responsibilities are, and then you do a quantity measure and a quality measure on the bits that's important to them. This goes off onto another conversation. I find it remarkable. So people say that I can't get my team to do what I want them to do. And then I say, so what do you want them to do? And they say, well, the work that I give them. Okay, well, what's the work that you're giving them? Well, it's work. And they've never actually clarified. And they don't even know what they're doing themselves, let alone expect the team to know what they're doing. So one of the tasks I always give them is, if they've got a challenge with a team member, is to sit down and write a letter of expectation. And whenever I do this, it always benefits the practice owner more than it does the team member. Ultimately, the team member benefits from it massively because they get clarity. But just you sitting down and writing what you expect of the person, what you're going to give them in order to help them do that, and then finally, the consequences for them if they don't do what you want them to do, it gives the practice owner clarity of mind. And then ultimately, when it's communicated to the team member, they get clarity as well. So I've lost count of the times where I've set that task for an accountant, they've wrote the letter of expectation and they've never sent it to the team member because they're embarrassed about the second section. They've never given clarity on the first section and they're embarrassed. So they then go and work and deliver that clarity. And of course, as soon as somebody knows what it is that you expect of them, they are more likely to achieve it and therefore the problem resolves itself. Now, just going back to the other point, James, my admin team, we call them customer care. Leanne and Sally and blah, 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 they have a responsibility to carry out those roles. We don't require them to carry out their role. So give me a, I'll give you an example. Our office at Greenstones is open from 8:30 in the morning until 4:00 at night in the afternoon. So Leanne has a responsibility to make sure the door is answered in 7.6 seconds. And I can go off and tell you about why it's 7.6 seconds if anybody's interested. But one of the things is that she has a responsibility to do that. Now, if Leanne doesn't want to come in the office during the day, say, for example, Leanne doesn't want to come in tomorrow, then she can say to any of the other team members, I don't want to come in because I've got a sofa being delivered or whatever it is. Can you carry out that role for me? Now, Dave or whoever it is can say, yes, I will do that for you, Leanne. And he will do that and answer the door. Now, sometimes Dave will want something in return. So Dave might say, okay, Leanne, I'll answer the door for you on Thursday, but on Friday, can you tick this bank for me, for example? Or can you scan in these documents to whoever it is that you post? So they negotiate in order to make sure that it's delivered. The other thing, which is really is fundamental, and I think it's been shown when we had to all leave the office in the middle of March, is the majority of the admin stuff now can be done remotely. So the only thing that we can't do is obviously answer the door and open the post. So at the moment, I've got one person going in and they go in between 9:30 and 11:30. They open the post. If anybody's got any documents they want to drop off, they drop it off or collect the documents and then the admin team go home. But obviously, if we was a functioning office in that people were coming and going as they like, then we'd have to have somebody there whilst the office is open.
No, thanks, Simon. So, and really the key to all of that is communication, isn't it? All of that is just based around communication with the internal team members, whether that's from a management level or on their sort of level with each other. I mean, for us, one of the things that we do, which it's all about, if you have a really strong team, the way to get, how do you get a strong team, I suppose? And one of the things is obviously that communication, having regular one-to-ones with your team members to establish what it is that they feel they need as well, and to allow you to deliver that message as to what you expect from them. And I think, you know, if I think back to when I was working as an accountant, you know, I just felt like I never had time to do anything, you know, so I never did any of those jobs. And only in sort of restructuring a business, I suppose, and starting something like accountancy manager and making sure that I had enough time to take on those roles. The key thing for me is always put it in the calendar. If you don't put something in the calendar, it's never going to happen. And that's how I manage nearly everything now. Everything goes on the calendar. And often I won't know what's going to be happening the next day or certainly the day after that. But it doesn't matter because when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I check my calendar and then I work through that day. And as an accountant, I always wanted to be invoicing. I always wanted to be doing account and invoicing. That's what I wanted to be doing. And anything that got in the way of that was going to cause me a problem. But that's kind of a false economy, isn't it? It's focusing too much on the now and not in the future. And if you can get a really good team working around you, then actually your business will excel.
Definitely. And I just picking up on that point, the calendar is a definite. You need to get it into the diary, allocate the time. So there's a great YouTube video. I'm trying to think of the chap's name. I want to say Peter Drucker, but I'm not convinced that's right. If anybody's interested, I'll email it to you, James, and you can email it out to the people on the list. The video is entitled, You Are Your Calendar. You are your calendar. Yeah. So if you're not achieving something, look at your calendar and the calendar will demonstrate to you why you're not achieving it. So you are your calendar. It needs to be in the calendar in order to make sure that you deliver and have time and space in order to do it. Default diaries. There's a whole load of stuff that we can that we can work on.
My father's terrible for it, you see, and I probably shouldn't say this on a live webinar, but it's one of them where he never has time to do anything. And the funny thing is, and it's a belief system as well, right? Because if an emergency happens, and it might not be a heavy emergency, but if there's some kind of emergency happens, suddenly you find time, don't you? A child, you know, you get a call from the school or whatever it might be. Suddenly, when you have no time at all, suddenly you've got time and you can find that time. And so this very rigid sort of pressure that we put on ourselves, it's an illusion, isn't it? We're sort of creating this elusive box around us as to what we can achieve. And actually, if we create a bit more space, then we can tackle those challenges.
Very much so. And there's a, you've just nailed, so I've created a thing called the Tax Return Commitment Club. And as a part of that, people are coming together to commit to have 90% of their tax returns done by the 30th of November, so they can have Christmas off and help their customers in January. So I've been doing quite a bit of research around procrastination and why we delay putting things off. Two of the things, one is immediacy. So I haven't got to worry about the tax returns because January is miles away. Let's play with something shiny like accountancy manager, or we'll go sit in the garden because it's a nice day or whatever it is. We'll do the tax returns tomorrow. Well, of course, tomorrow never comes. Yeah. So immediacy and then distractions. Oh, there's an email popped up. I need to do the email. Oh, there's a webinar just come up. I need to do the webinar. Yeah. So fundamentally, there's four combinations, four things. Those two, so a delay and a distraction, are on the bottom line. So you obviously, you need to reduce those. One of the ways that you can increase the immediacy is to create false deadlines. So the brain doesn't understand the difference between a deadline and a false deadline. So it knows about the 31st of January. But if you say to your brain, I'm going to have 30% of my tax returns done by the 31st of July, for example, you create some pain if that doesn't happen, then you are much more likely to get 30% done by the 31st of July than if mentally you're saying to yourself, I'm going to do 100% by the 31st of January, because that's miles away. So create some urgency, some immediacy, and definitely get it in the diary. The other point that you touched on, James, as well, is around relationships and trust. And I feel a bit like a book club. There is a fantastic book called Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. That book is so good. It is in my top, let's say top 10 of all time, but it's a very, very good book. He talks about the five levels. The number one fundamental basis of any relationship is trust. So if you don't trust your team, they won't trust you. If the individual team members don't trust each other, they can't have a conversation about who's doing what, whether they're answering the door. You can't have a conversation around KPIs if there's any element of trust at all. Because if you don't trust somebody, then you can't have conflict. And if you don't have conflict, proactive conflict, then there is always something left unsaid. And it's at that point people walk away from the conversation. They go to the water cooler, they go to the photocopier, and they do what everybody does, is they and moan. I was going to swear then, but I won't swear. They moan behind your back and your colleague's back. And then that element of trust just dissipates. So if you've got any challenges within your team, in a relationship between yourselves or within individual team members, then focus on trust. What can I do to increase the trust that I have with that person, or the trust within the two relations? Works at home as well, with husbands and wives and partners and all that sort of stuff. That relationship is a trust relationship. So if you're having difficulties, there's a mistrust there potentially. Once you've got trust, you can have conflict. And once you've got conflict, you can have commitment. Because people feel aired. They feel as though they've had their voices heard in a safe environment. Everything's been taken into account, and then they can commit to the decision that has been made because they understand why it has been made. So yeah, Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, absolute must read book if you've got problems with relationships or have got a team.
You know, that's great, Simon. And I think, yeah, again, I mean, you're touching a lot again on communication. And if you are seeing areas in your team where there seems to be discomfort, it is essential that you challenge that. And I don't mean, you know, in an aggressive way at all. I mean that you open the door to allow those conversations to take place so that you can deal with them. Because if you do get some poison, I suppose, amongst your team, that can spread around the team and it can create all sorts of other issues. So it is important to deal with that. The other thing is around that, I suppose, is people. People make decisions a lot of the time. It's something that that my younger brother said to me a while back, actually, and it stuck with me. And it's that people make decisions based on emotions, and they do. You know, a lot of the time, people react in decision-making situations with emotion rather than logic, and we have to be aware of people. Of that's where people are at a lot of the time when we're communicating with them. So I think just a bit of food for thought on that as well. And I can't now not mention, because you touched on deadlines, and you touched on creating a fake deadline, going back to this sort of management of time, if you like. it'd be a sin if I now didn't mention to the audience that because of exactly what Simon's talking about, he set me up, you see, next week, and I don't want to put this as hard stone, I'll get told off by my development team for doing this, but the idea is that next week we will have released target dates. And the idea behind that is that you don't just have external deadlines, which are your 31st of January deadlines and your end of the month deadlines for those company house accounts, but actually you can set your target deadlines, your internal deadlines. And the way that this whole process has been set up is that you can default it to days after the period end, or you can default it to days after you've received those records. Or you can just put a custom target date in. But the whole point behind target dates is that you create that fake deadline, which alleviates a lot of that stress, which is going to come further down the line if you don't implement something. Essential that I got that in there, as I say. It was a sort of quick new feature update for everybody. But moving on from there, Simon, I mean, we've been talking a lot around the way that your team work and things. Is there any disadvantages to the way that you've set things up in the business? What bad experiences might have you had?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So when you start working wherever you like, whenever you like, whenever I talk about it, people say, but you, it must be chaos, Simon. How do you know where people are? And that presents some challenges to start with. We have some ground rules about how quickly people need to return calls and respond to emails. But the reality of it is we're all creatures of habit. So if you go down this process, and I'm not suggesting that you go into the office or you ring everybody up tomorrow and say, start working wherever you like, whenever you like, because that would literally be anarchy. There's a process that you should go through in order to make sure that it's implemented. But when you actually do it, it goes crazy for a couple of weeks, for a couple of months. People disappear off, and I've had all sorts of different things. But generally speaking, people are creatures of habit and they fall back into a routine. So if we was in the office today, I know that a certain individual, they would turn up at about 9:30 this morning because they would have got up, they would have gone to the gym, they would have took the kids to school, and then they would have come to the office. I know that most of the people don't want to be in the office on a Friday afternoon. So they'll come in on the morning, they'll have lunch together, they'll have a cup of coffee or whatever, and then they'll go home in the afternoon. So people become creatures of habit. So you kind of know what they're up to, even though they've got complete freedom. Now, the big one, the fundamental one, is what responsibility it creates and the accountability that it creates, both for you as the business owner or the practice owner and the team member that's operating within the system. So if we agree on targets, James, and you miss those targets, I have to take action. I am accountable for taking action for you because you've failed. Yeah. Now, if we have time, I can come up with 101 excuses why I'm not going to discipline you. It's the time of the thingy. It's the cat's died. There's 101 different things. Oh, I don't feel very well. I had too much to drink. I'm a bit tired. I'd rather go. There's 101 reasons not to discipline somebody. Now, the first time somebody misses their targets and you don't take action, that gives permission to everybody else to miss their targets. So you have to be on the ball. You have to hold people accountable. And I personally find that quite difficult. I find it a challenge. I know some people don't. Some people like the aggressiveness of it. They like the authoritarian, but that's not me. The flip side of it from a team member's point of view is you're now giving them clarity on what it is that you want them to achieve. So they can no longer turn around and go, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know he expected me to do that. I didn't know that needed doing by whatever time. And therefore, it's a more pressured environment. Now, this works again for different sorts of people. We have a monthly target, a quarterly target, an annual target, and those targets are all broken down into weekly targets. I know that there are certain individuals within the team that will be running around mad under pressure the last 3 or 4 days of the month, and they will bill everything in that last week. And they feel the pressure. There are other team members that go, right, okay, I need to build 10 grand this month. I'm going to build 2.5 grand per month, per week. And they achieve it. And it's a much more relaxed environment. So the pressure and the clarity that it brings, or the clarity brings the pressure, brings the productivity. And you need to be, I won't say more on the ball, you are more exposed if it's not working, if you get it wrong. But because it's exposed, you can take action. And because you take action, you carry on improving. So the big thing is the pressure around the targets. And then I suppose the second one is being vulnerable, which I know some business owners find difficult because sometimes you'll get the targets wrong. They'll either be too high or they'll be too low, or you'll miss something off, and you need the ability to go back to the team member to be sincere and say, look, I got that wrong. This is what we need to do going forward. And I know some people find that a little bit difficult.
Yeah, no, that sounds good, Simon. And you've given me an idea, which is what we should do as a version two on this target date feature is that if a target date is missed, a notification is sent to the manager. Because by doing that, you're in a position then as well to sort of bring that up. And I think you're right. It's important to challenge that as well and to not just ignore it, especially in the first instance. It's funny that we kind of talk about not treating the team as children, as they wouldn't be treated when they were at home and they're having, you know, that they've got all their own responsibilities. But then in the office, you know, we can still find ourselves probably just as much as our team members is that we push boundaries, don't we? You know, we look to push boundaries. And so if there is nothing stopping those boundaries being pushed, they'll be pushed further and further and further. So it is essential that gets dealt with. And usually, you know, in my experience, what we do is in the first instance, it would be a very sort of casual conversation. We've noticed this is what's happening for you at the moment. You know, try and understand the situation a bit more. And then if we get repetitive instances of something at that point, then we may have to come down a bit harder. But you're dead right, I think. It's very important to deal with it in the first instance. Otherwise, you know, you've let the horse out of the stable.
Definitely, and it goes back to that: you get what you tolerate. So if you're tolerating, that's what you will get. So again, there's a brilliant phrase: help me to understand. So James, this is what you're currently producing. Yeah, help me to understand how we can improve that. Yeah, so you place the responsibility and the emphasis on the team member to share what they need from you, and then you've got to deliver it. But then they share with you what they need in order to improve, and then you deliver it. And if they still don't get it right, then that's where you've potentially got the challenge.
Absolutely.
Now, your software people are not going to like me saying this, but let me just throw this example to you. So you just talked about getting an email or the manager getting an email when somebody's missed the target. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if the email came out 3 days before the target so the manager could check in and see if they're having any difficulty? Yeah. And even better still, wouldn't it be nice if the manager got an email when they did it early? Because then that manager can catch them doing it right. They can celebrate it with them and they can encourage them to get better. So again, it's incredibly easy. We all do it as human beings. Somebody will come to you and they'll give you four pieces of work. There'll be one piece of work that's wrong and you will focus on how they can get that one piece of work better rather than celebrating the fact that they've done three pieces of great work. And I always talk, again, when I talk about this, I talk about Lionel Messi. Nobody moans that Lionel Messi's not got a right foot. He touches the ball 9 times out of 10 with his left foot. He is the most left-footed player in the world. Nobody beats him from the number of touches with his left foot. But I'll bet your bottom dollar on a Monday morning when he goes into training, they do not concentrate on his right foot. That alone is goalkeeping skills. So where the hell are we? Yeah. So celebrate on what people are doing right. There's another phrase that I use: never send a chicken up a tree. So sometimes a chicken looks like it can fly and it might be able to fly up a tree, but don't send it up a tree, send a squirrel. So work out the right person to go up the tree and then develop them to their strengths rather than focusing on their weaknesses. And there's all sorts of research out there, but you're supposed to find 4 right things to 1 wrong thing. So 80% of the time, celebrate the successes. It's incredibly difficult to do, but celebrate the successes. And the way that you do that is you don't just thank the team member for doing a good job, because generally speaking, that team member will turn around and go, ah, it was nothing. It's what you pay me to do. And they can throw it away. They can throw the thank you away. But going back to your emotions point, James, you talk about the emotion that you've experienced because they've done a good job. And I know this is touchy-feely stuff again for lots of accountants, middle-aged blokes and all the rest of it. But if you say to somebody, I'm very proud, I'm proud of the way that you've done that job. It's helped me reassure me and helped me feel good inside. They cannot argue with that because they cannot argue with how you feel. You're the only one that knows how you feel. So they have to receive that knowledge with good grace. So I know your developers won't like it, but have a focus on catching people doing things right.
Yeah, no, I like that, Simon. It's interesting, and you know, this is how ideas are flooding into my mind about all the different ways you could do this. And you're right, the development team will hate you and me for it. But I've got these ideas where kind of like, you know, you hit complete and the target date is 3 days before, and a little sort of, you know, little confetti flies up on the screen. Sort
yeah,
of
a little emoji.
3 days before. Yeah, and then a report is generated at the end of the month that says these are all the staff that they completed their targets 25 days in advance in total. Or something, you know, how wonderful would that be? But let's not get ahead of ourselves, because it's, you know, there's so much I'd like to be able to do with the accountancy manager, and we are now very fortunately in a position where it's I'm happy to share this with everybody. You know, we, as people know, we had exponential growth in our first few years, and going through growth pains, and sort of, which I never really understood what those were until we actually experienced them. And the team that we now have is an absolute dream, and it's off the back of a lot of the things that me and Simon have been talking about, which is just, you know, different ways of dealing with your team and the way that you deal with your business, and making sure that you put the right time aside for the right things. And now we've got a development team which has grown, you know, by 50% in the last sort of 18 months. And things, as everybody on here that is an accountancy manager user knows, things are happening every single month, sometimes as soon as weekly. So some really exciting times here. And we will get round to doing as much as we can to make your experience, you know, as good as it possibly can be. So we'll watch this space. There's a project that we're working on, which I can't tell anybody what it is, but it's but we've given it a name. It's called Project Phoenix, and there is some incredible new things coming out the back of it. It's going to be a bit of time before it gets out. It's the first time I've mentioned that in a live webinar, but just generating a bit of excitement maybe around the sort of stuff that we might be doing here at AM. So I've sort of taken the conversation away a bit there, Simon, but looking at one of our sort of final questions that we've got on here is if you were to do it all again, what would you do differently, or what would you do, what wouldn't you do?
Brilliant, thank you. And I'm just conscious of Elliot's question in the Q&A box. I will definitely answer that, Elliot, although it's a massive question for me to answer, and I'm a little bit conscious of the time. If anybody's got any questions, just pop them in the Q&A and I will gladly answer them, or tell you I'm not answering them, whichever way, but pop them in the Q&A. What would I not do? There are lots of things that I have done through ego, to a degree arrogance, and I've made mistakes. I can think of direct marketing campaigns that I've sent out that I wish I'd not sent, and there's a whole host of different things which I can share, or I'll gladly share with people. Many moons ago, when I was in a position where I was afraid of confrontation, I managed to fire somebody on a Friday night, and they turned up to work on a Monday morning because they didn't know that they'd been fired on the Friday. So there's all sorts of different things. If I'd have got more confidence, more self-belief in myself, more discipline. So again, somebody shared with me last year, there are two pains in life. There's the pain of regret or the pain of discipline. So when you do something, you're either going to have the pain of being disciplined enough to do it, or you're going to have the pain of regret of not doing it. Well, I've got all sorts of pain that I regret. There is, James has talked about the problems around growth. I am a massive person around getting distracted. So I sit down this morning, I've got a little table outside, I sit there and have a cup of coffee. I think, oh, I quite enjoyed that. I'll have another cup of coffee. And then I'll flick on Facebook and all of a sudden there's an advert for interactive video. Wow. Yeah. So you could have an interactive video where people choose and click on the video and it drives them to the solution that they want. Whoa, I want some of that. I definitely want some of that. Oh, it's only 97 quid. And before I know where I am, I've added this next thing to my list. There's already massive. There's a huge amount of overwhelm. There could be a huge amount of overwhelm there. I know that makes us the entrepreneurs that we are, that when we work, because we're coming up with those ideas, I wish I have this thing again that I've learned, the difference between commentary and instruction. So I will very often think out there. So that example with the video, I know I've spoken to two team members about that this morning, and I dare bet you that those team members have gone away and thought, oh God, Simon's doing this thing with interactive video. How are we going to cope with that? Now, what I should be doing is, because it's an idea that I've got excited about, I should be saying to them, this is commentary. This is Simon thinking out loud about something that might possibly happen, rather than them going, and I know that I've done that this morning. Now I'm conscious of it. I need to go back to those individuals and say, we're not doing it. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. It was commentary. So if there was one thing that I regret, if there was one thing that I personally would like to improve as a skill, is my ability to plan and then ultimately be disciplined around that plan, James. I know that doesn't give you a massive answer, but no, everything else has been a lesson, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And I'm sure lots of other business owners out there that are on the group with us now feel the same way. You know, it's that entrepreneurial sort of sense, isn't it? Where you're just you're all over the place all the time with all these great new ideas. You want to do all this new stuff. And then if you do have a team, you start to share these ideas with the team and not really be expecting them to do anything with it. It's more just out of your excitement, you know? And you've got to sometimes bring that back in a bit. And it comes back to sort of just sort of managing your time and your thoughts and everything, isn't it? It's the whole thing. Getting distracted, procrastination. One of the things I had to do was I had to delete all social media apps off my phone. I can't have them on my phone because I'm terrible for it. I almost went as far as you can buy this for those of you that want some enforced willpower. You can buy a little box. I think it's called the kitchen box or something, and it's got a timer on it. And you can go and put your phone in there or something or whatever it might be. If you've got children, their PlayStation controllers or whatever it might be, and you can set a timer on it and set it to go, and it won't let you into that box for the amount of time that you've set. I mean, it's a great product that I saw on Amazon. Just worth mentioning, but it's about sort of keeping focused, isn't it? I think is the key thing there.
Oh, very much so, yeah. And it's a bit, again, I was explaining to somebody yesterday, and Paul, I've seen your question in the Q&A. If you've got something specific that you would like me to talk into, please do. Otherwise, I'll throw some ideas at you, one of which is direction. So I talked earlier briefly about team not knowing what to do, and that's because the practitioner doesn't know what to do. And lots of times that's because the practitioner is too afraid to decide, they're too afraid to share it with the world. So number one thing is decide where you're going. Now, you might decide, for example, I'm in, well, Peterborough, so you might decide that you're going to go to Scotland. So at that point, I know that I've got to go out of my drive and I've got to go north, yeah, to get to Scotland. If I didn't say Scotland, I'll get to the end of the drive and I don't know whether I'm going north, east, west or south. So let's just say Scotland. Now, as I'm driving towards Scotland, I might go, oh, Yorkshire looks pretty. Let's go to Yorkshire and stop at Yorkshire because that's enough. I might also get halfway to Scotland and go, oh, I've gone the wrong way. I really want to go to Wales and turn around and go to Wales. But at least I'm going somewhere with direction. There's another one that I use a lot. Sticking wings on a bike won't make it fly. So sticking wings on a bike won't make it fly. And what we very often do as business owners is we have a bike and we're pedaling and then we go somewhere or we see something and think, oh, that's great. Stick it on the bike and then we pedal a bit harder. And eventually we're pedaling that hard that we're wearing ourselves out and we've got all these wings stuck on. Now, what you need to do is work out, firstly, where you're pedaling the bike, and secondly, whether it's a bike that you should be, whether it should be a bike or a car or a motorbike or whatever it is, and then start putting the accessories on. So number one thing is work out what it is that you want, give yourself permission to change your mind if you want to, and then start to make progress towards that, because otherwise you'll just get distracted by everything and everything, and you'll end up with a massive list of stuff to do and get overwhelmed. So work out where you're going and then break it down. I used to do 3-year goals. Don't do that anymore. Do 12 months, 3 months, 1 month and 1 week, and then work towards that.
Yeah.
So that would be my number one, Paul. Just talking G's and or Jez and Elliot, top 10 books and name the books that I'm talking about. I've never produced a list of top 10 books of all time. I have shared my top 5 books of 2019, of which A Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham was number one. There's a YouTube video. So if you go to my YouTube channel, Pull Your Socks Up Simon is the YouTube channel. You can see that video. There's some really interesting books. Traction, if you've not read Traction, it's a must read for me. Didn't get it the first time around, got it the second time around. Switch by Chip and Dan Heath, anything by Chip and Dan Heath. Fantastic authors, fantastic books, provoked me in all sorts of ways. Nine Lies of the Workplace, another great book. It will prompt you, provoke you on how we work and why we work. And then if you've got a team, the other number one is First Break All the Rules. So the idea around catching people making mistakes and stuff like that, as opposed to celebrating them, then is a fantastic book, again, that will challenge you. I know I'm throwing lots of books. There's going to be a recording, James, so people can watch the recording again, I believe, if they want to. It'll be sent out. What I'll do is in the chat box, I'll put a URL. And on the URL, you can go to my website. You can get a copy of 12 More Referrals or Get More Referrals. In there, there's 15 recruitment ideas as well. These are bits of paper because they are hard copies are back in the office. And then I also share an initial customer contact sheet, which, again, people find really interesting because it's asked some great questions. If you want copies of the books or any of the links, if you go to that URL and stick your details in, I'll gladly send them to you. Or if you don't want to go onto that mailing list, if I do that and do that, if you just email me again with any questions, I will gladly support you. So I take the Inspire Challenge and support business owners and their teams to be the very best they want to be. It's my driver. It's why I do what I do. So I'm hoping this conversation has inspired you, provoked you, challenged you into taking action and making change. And if it has, I will gladly support you through that process, because I know change is difficult. It's sometimes a bit daunting. I will gladly help you through that. And just to finish off, James, I'm conscious of the time. I'm passionate about people taking action. So even if it's just a tiny, wincy, tiny little thing that you're going to do as a result of being here today, go and do it. And do it immediately. So the quicker you take that action, the more likely it is that you're going to do it. So if you've got something that you can do in the next 10 minutes, nip onto Amazon or whatever it is and buy the book, download the book onto Audible, just do that before you go to the park at 10 past two, or go and get your lunch, or go and ring that customer or whatever it is, in order for you to start the chain, in order for you to start the process.
That's fantastic, Simon. I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to mention, Simon? I know we've kind of dealt with people's questions. We're really close to time now, aren't we? So have you kind of got out there everything that you wanted to share with the audience? I think they've got a lot from it.
Brilliant. If anybody wants to share the action that they're going to take in the chat box, please do, or email me, please do. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, then again, please do that. The link, Donna, was in the chat box. I know what I've done. So if I change it, there we go. You see, it's because I'm being too efficient now. If I do that, I only sent it to James, and James has already got it. So if I do that and do that, that's the link to the free resources. If you'd like to go there and get that, this will be my email address. So you can email me if you have any questions that aren't covered off in the free resources. And then if anybody wants to connect with me on LinkedIn and ask questions, then this is my LinkedIn profile. And if you think I've been lovely and you fancy leaving a recommendation or anything like that, then please do that as well. But no, it's the fundamental message, James, from me, is to think out of the box, think against the norm. Don't just accept the norm, because that's what we've been doing for the last donkey's years. Be creative, trust your team, treat them as grown-ups, trust your customers, and most of all, decide on where it is that you're going and then do something about it. So if we was making it accountancy manager specific today, I bet you there are people on this call that have got challenges with accountancy manager, and they've just not got around to ringing the support team, for argument's sake. So as soon as you finish, and they're not going to thank me for this, James, as soon as you're finished, pick up the phone and start to do something with it, because you'll feel so much better. Perhaps not all ring the support team. If you've got, I don't know, if your first name begins from A to E, then you ring the support team. Maybe, rest of you go on Amazon.
Start with an email, and if you need to call them, drop them a call. Otherwise, we'll get inundated, because we've had a really good turnout on this webinar as well. But that's what a fantastic end, Simon, and a great message that you've given to the audience today. I'm really pleased with the way it's gone. I think it's been just the information that's got out there, and it's been very natural, and I hope that everybody's enjoyed it today. There will be another question came in at the end there. We've mentioned it a couple of times. Yes, there will be a webinar recording available. We will send it out to everybody that's attended or registered. And me and Simon might look to do something in the future, and if we do, we'll let everybody know, and we'll go from there. But I thank everybody for attending today. Thank you, Simon, for joining us and the great advice that you've been giving, and we'll end it. Thank you very much, everyone.
Brilliant, excellent. Thank you very much, James. Thank you.